Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS In the Now podcast channel. As always, we are joined today for the conversation by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Shane, great to be with you as always. Thank you for dropping by on this Thursday morning to spend some time with our listeners, our clients. As always, a lot to catch them up on. So thank you for being here.
Well, it's good to be back with you, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's begin, Shane, of course, with geopolitics, a lot happening in this space over the past couple of weeks, which we have been covering, though, in the wake of this past weekend's U.S. strikes on Iran's nuclear sites. What do we know about in terms of the U.S. brokered Israel-Iran ceasefire, which appears to remain holding in place as we're recording here on June 26th, along with the success rate of the U.S. strikes, which in the media seems to be up for debate a bit?
Yeah, that's right. With discrepancy and back and forth about how much damage was actually caused at these three sites. I will tell you that the latest information I've seen quote was from the director of the International Atomic Energy Agency, who indicated that these sites had suffered enormous damage. So, you know, I think the tough part here is that, you know, without someone there to physically examine it, which in reality is not possible from, you know, the U.S.'s perspective, it can't be completely evaluated. I think, you know, to the point, though, that this is a big setback for Iran, and, you know, it's not something that will be reversed in a couple of weeks. So it's a notable setback. As for the, you know, U.S.-Israel ceasefire, it is still holding, and, you know, hopefully it will continue to hold. The supreme leader of Iran, the Ayatollah, gave his first televised remarks just a few hours ago since the ceasefire deal has been reached. And in that, you know, he put on some bravado and, you know, pushed back and, you know, said the Islamic Republic had slapped America in the face, and noted that Iran had attacked on a base, a U.S. base in the region. Of course, none of those missiles actually got through and made any impact on that U.S. base. So I think that is a way of an off-ramp for Iran to, you know, puff out their chest and live with the ceasefire for the moment. They have indicated that, you know, if Israel strikes them again, they will retaliate. So I think right now the ceasefire is holding, and I'm cautiously optimistic that it will continue to hold. But obviously this is for decades now been kind of a region that, is a tinderbox, and I think that will continue to be the case.
So the military operation carried out by the U.S., quite bold. How have world leaders as well as U.S. lawmakers responded to these developments, including the ceasefire? And on somewhat of a related note, what are some takeaways from this week's NATO summit in the Netherlands, notably some newly pledged spending commitments to note there?
Yeah, no, you know, the takeaway from the U.S. actions is kind of mixed, depending on who you ask, right? You know, the head of Germany applauded President Trump's order to drop those bunker busters on those Iranian nuclear sites. But there are, of course, detractors, and some of those detractors are here in the U.S. in Congress, right? You have some lawmakers here in the U.S. that supported the president's actions. Some are very concerned that it may drag us into a deeper war with Iran. Some are concerned that, you know, it has violated the constitutionality of what a president can do. You know, you have mixed reviews, if you will. And some of those are, you know, while the lawmakers may think that it was the right thing to do, they're concerned about what happens next. So there, it's not a, you know, black and white thing here, right? But I, to your point about NATO, I think, you know, this kind of has brought some of the NATO countries together. And what you saw out of that summit was the 32 leaders endorse a final summit statement saying that they commit to invest 5% of GDP on defense and, you know, security related spending by 2035, so a decade from now. And that is something that, you know, President Trump has sought. You know, it was in his first term, it was about NATO countries getting to actually meet their requirement to spend 2%. And so this is a further push by Trump that, you know, I think he is very going to be very proud of, that he got, you know, countries to sign off on this. If you look at what countries in NATO are spending, I think Poland may be closest to that 5% of GDP mark, where you have countries like Italy, Spain, and Portugal, and Luxembourg, who are on the lower end of the spectrum and not even at the 2% existing threshold yet. So I think, though, that, you know, this is welcome news to President Trump and something he will be pretty proud of.
So outside of geopolitics here at home, all focus has been up on Capitol Hill. As we've been tracking, the U.S. Senate has been working through adjustments to the reconciliation package. As of today, Shane, what do we know in the way of notable changes made by the Senate? What are the next steps? And is that July 4th signing deadline still achievable at this point? We're just about a week out.
Yeah, the Senate bill makes a number of changes to the House bill, you know. And it's a long list. I mean, I'll give just a few examples. You know, on the tax side, there is the SALT cap of $40,000 in the House bill is brought back down to $10,000 in the Senate bill. However, the Senate recognizes that that's a negotiating spot and will probably actually be one of the last things to be decided in this bill. Very fluid conversations there. The green energy tax credits, I think the Senate bill is a little bit more favorable and gives towards those credits and gives them a little bit smoother of a glide path. However, I think this is another thing where the bill that we have seen is not the final bill. We're going to see more development probably in the next 24, 48 hours that change some of these details. Additionally, you know, I would note that there's a big kerfuffle about some of the international components to this bill, of how, you know, international businesses are taxed, how people who are investing in the U.S. could be impacted by some of these tax regimes. And this is all in an effort for the U.S. to push back on what they view as discriminatory taxes toward U.S. companies, like digital services taxes and a global minimum tax that many countries are pursuing. So this is evolving, you know, as we speak. And I think to your point, that is that, you know, the Senate is trying to move very quickly on this. I would expect them to maybe start debating it today or tomorrow, probably tomorrow, because of the time is getting a little late now to start today, with the goal of voting on it this weekend. And then the House could take it up pretty quickly, probably like Tuesday of next week, and then get it to the president's desk the 4th of July. That is a very ambitious and aggressive timeline. But, you know, President Trump, Republicans in Congress are pushing very hard to try and meet that. So I think it's still achievable to have this done by 4th of July. Could it slip? Absolutely. You know, there's still a number of conversations about where to land on provisions like Medicaid and a number of other items. So very fluid conversations as of today. But I do think that we're starting to see the end zone in sight, and we're going to have this done pretty soon.
Well, Shane, thank you for the update there. As we have been tracking this for quite some time, we will see what the next few days deliver. If we stick with the Senate, last week a bill was passed to establish a regulatory framework for stablecoins. So from your vantage point, what's the significance of this and how does it compare to similar efforts being worked on by the House?
Yeah, So this is known as the Genius Act, and the Senate had a bipartisan passage vote of 68-30. Pretty favorable for the Senate to do that. You know, we don't see many bipartisan actions by the Senate these days, right? And this stablecoin bill, you know, stablecoin is a type of cryptocurrency designed to maintain a constant value. And if this bill is signed into law, it would require tokens to be backed by liquid assets, such as U.S. dollars or short-term treasury bills. This is kind of a newer technology, if you will, that I think in the marketplace will be growing once this structure, this kind of regulatory regime is able to bring structure to the market. And so there's a lot of excitement about this. But however, to your point, you know, there is differences between this and the House bill. You know, no decisions have been made between the House and Senate at this time of what they're going to do. You could have a formal conference where they sit down and hash out the differences between the two bills. President Trump has indicated he just wants to get this signed into law and wants the House just to pass the Senate bill. I don't think the House has made a decision if they would go that route yet. So I think that when we come back after the 4th of July break, we'll have a better sense of where this stablecoin legislation is heading and, you know, how and will it become law.
Shane, thank you for dropping by the podcast today to keep our listeners, our clients informed on a range of topics, top of mind for many here at home, and for covering these very fluid geopolitical developments as well. So thank you again, Shane. Great catching up with you as always, and look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
Thank you, Dan. Good to be with you. And if we don't speak, I hope everyone has a great 4th of July, and I look forward to catching up soon.
Likewise. Thank you, Shane. Appreciate it. Again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs US here at UBS. And as always, I would like to point you, our listeners, our clients, to the Washington Weekly publication. The latest can now be located up on ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.